Good evening. It's certainly good to be back here. I'm glad we have been able to kind of ride out this storm of the COVID and be able to get meeting again. Hopefully we'll be able to continue. As maybe hopefully this thing is about running its course, I'm hoping. For a little while this evening, we're going to study a lesson. I invite you to turn your scriptures to the book of Leviticus. It's Leviticus chapter 25. My assignment is to continue with Daniel, but I'm kind of taking a little bit of a detour. We'll end up back in Daniel at the end. And I feel like I'm just on the tip of the iceberg of having any understanding of this concept. So Leviticus 25 is where we're going to study. I'm not going to read the whole chapter because it's kind of extensive reading, but I have several verses that we'll pull out. We're going to talk about what's called the year of Jubilee. And I think that's something that's very important that really a lot of people, we don't talk about it. We don't study about it. If you turn back a couple pages, is Leviticus chapter 23. And I spent a lot of time on this a couple years ago studying these feasts of the Lord. And how all of these feasts of the Lord, from the Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the first fruits, the weeks, and so forth, come to find out they all kind of point towards Jesus. And they're all somehow interconnected with Jesus and his ministry or his life or his death. It's amazing how everything just fit into place with this idea of the feast of the Lord. Well, I think the idea of the Sabbath year for the rest of the land and the year of Jubilee from Leviticus 25 also has very, very strong messianic ties. So as I say, I feel like I have very little understanding of this. I'm just kind of skimming through it. But we're going to kind of look at Leviticus chapter 25, and then we'll extend it into some of the Old Testament prophets, and then we'll finally extend it into the study of Jesus in the New Testament. So we'll try to undertake this for a little while this evening. Before we go further, let's go to God and a word of prayer. The year of Jubilee. This is one of those things that's kind of just found hidden back in the Old Testament. As far as the book of Leviticus, and it's mentioned a couple times here and there throughout the Old Testament, and then it just kind of disappears. And it's something that maybe we've heard, but might not be overly sure what it is, and really of the importance that I think that it carries with it. Here's the idea of the year of Jubilee. It starts in Leviticus chapter 25. It's a rather lengthy passage, so I'm not going to read all of it. I may summarize a little bit here and there. But there's kind of two parts to it. And the first is what is called the Sabbath year. So in Leviticus 25, and the Lord spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai, speak to the Israelites and say to them, when you enter the land I'm going to give you, the land itself must observe a Sabbath to the Lord. And so I have here in a second, we'll look, the word Sabbath, that just means rest. That the land was going to have a rest. And this sounds, at first thought, this kind of sounds a little bit crazy. But that's what God said. He said, for 6 years, you'll plant, in 6 years you'll harvest. But on that seventh year, nothing. You have to give the land a time to rest. Verse 4 says, but in the seventh year, the land is to have a year of Sabbath rest, a Sabbath to the Lord. Do not sow your fields or prune your vineyards. Now, I don't know much about farming, but I do understand people rotate crops, and they understand that there's times that you just have to let the ground kind of replenish itself from the minerals and whatnot that need to grow. But the idea that the entire country would just shut down for a year, to me, is overwhelming. It's not quite as overwhelming as it was about this time in March last year, the idea of just shutting everything down. But that's what the land was supposed to do, was to shut down and to take a rest. This was to happen every 7 years. This was known as the Sabbath year rest. And it says, don't worry about anything. Don't worry about trying to grow anything. Don't harvest it. Leave the vines unattended. Verse 6 says, whatever the land yields during the Sabbath year will be food for you, for yourself, for your male and female servants, and the hired workers and temporary residents who live among you, as well as your livestock, the wild animals, whatever the land produces may be eaten. But you weren't supposed to do anything with it. You weren't supposed to tend it. Things were still going to grow. Things would still come up. Had my first foray into gardening this year during the little quarantine shutdown. So I had all my tomato plants up, and I was so proud of them, and they did great. And then about October, we had the one cold day, that one cold snap, and it really shut them down. And so I just left them alone. I didn't mess with them. I didn't touch them. I didn't water them. I didn't do anything. And I went and pulled the last tomatoes off that vine the day after Christmas, December 26th. It's crazy, that it, but it stayed alive. It kept working. It kept producing. The land's going to take care of itself. And so God said, hey, just leave it alone. That seventh year, if anything does come up, it's free for eat. But every seventh year was to be a year of rest. It was a Sabbath day rest. So there's the word. Merriam-Webster Dictionary says, we trace the origins of this word Sabbath, and we have another word that's called sabbatical, where you take off of work and maybe you don't work for a year and you write your book or whatever. I wanted to try that, never have. But the sabbatical traces its word back to this Hebrew word meaning rest. That's what the idea of the sabbatical is. Keep going. Leviticus 25 and 8. Now this is where it gets really interesting. It says, count off seven Sabbath years, seven times seven. So this is where I kind of came into this with the idea of Daniel. Remember the 77s? Some translations say 70 weeks, but it's really the 77s. I think Daniel had to have thought back to this passage. The idea of the 77s. It's groups of these years. It's these sabbatical years. 49 years. But seven sabbatical years amount to a period of 49 years. Then have the trumpet sounded everywhere on the 10th day of the 7th month, on the Day of Atonement. Sound the trumpet throughout your land. So you went 49 years, and then on the Day of Atonement, which was in the fall, this was a 1 year from fall to fall. Now you blew the trumpet. This was the 50th year. Seven periods of 7 years, 49 years, and then to start the next year, verse 10 says, consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all the land to all the inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you. Each of you is to return to your family property and to your own clan. This was called the year of jubilee, and I really still can't even begin to understand this concept. It's so foreign to us in our capitalistic society. Land was never actually sold. It is, we have to understand that. The land had been given as an inheritance to different groups. You couldn't sell it. Technically, you didn't own it. God owned it. And God gave the land as an inheritance. I guess you could consider leasing it. But the inheritance was passed down from generation to generation. And on the year of Jubilee, every 50 years, that land could be redeemed to the rightful owner or the rightful heir of the land. Which is something that we have no concept here. We buy it, we sell it, we buy something else, we sell it, we buy something else, and we have the deed or we have the right to that land. And under the law of Moses, that was not the case. He says in the 50th year, you have a jubilee. Number one, he says don't reap, don't sow. It's a jubilee that's going to be taken. Take what you can eat. Don't take care of the crops. Don't take care of the land. And as far as the land that goes with you, hey, it's going to go back to the people that rightfully own it. It's an unbelievable concept. I got a question for you, though. How will the people survive? How would you have a Sabbath year? The 49th year would have been a Sabbath year. And then the 50th year is the year of Jubilee. For 2 years, you weren't allowed to plant crops. How would the people have survived during this time? Yeah, God took care of it. I'm kind of skipping around a little bit. Leviticus, some of it seems to be a little bit out of place. It makes more sense to kind of put your verses, your passages together. Here's what it says, Leviticus 8, 25, 18. Follow my decrees and be careful to obey my laws, and you will live safely in the land. If you do what you're supposed to, he says, you're going to have plenty of food. You're going to have safety. Everything's going to be good. Look what he says. What will we eat in the seventh year if we do not plant or harvest our crops? God says, don't worry about it. I will send you such a blessing in the sixth year that the land will yield enough for 3 years. So that sixth year, the crops would be so great that you'd be able to store it for the next 3 years, for year six, for year seven, and year eight. That's pretty interesting. God said, don't worry about it. Take care of it. This is a great message in faith. You just had to wait till that ninth year. Pretty interesting. Leviticus 25 and 13, so here we go. Here's the second part of it. In this year of Jubilee, everyone is to return to their own property. That is unbelievable. That we would buy a piece of land from someone. In the 50th year, you had to return it or give the opportunity to return that land to whoever originally was deeded that land, whoever the original inheritance went to. So there's a lot of rules now that go with this. So the rest of Leviticus 25 is kind of going through these rules. Here's Leviticus 25:23. The land must not be sold permanently. So you could lease it, but you couldn't sell it. Because the land is mine, says God. And you reside in my land as foreigners and strangers. It says, throughout the land that you hold as a possession, you must provide for the redemption of the land. So you had to give opportunity for whoever the original inheritance, the original heir, they had the right to redeem their property. Now, it was prorated. I've always kind of wondered that. I didn't know that until I studied it. I've always thought, well, I think I would just go buy something in the year after the year of Jubilee, and then I'd get to hold it for 49 years. But if you only waited till the year before the year of Jubilee, you'd only have it for a year and have to give it back. Well, it was kind of prorated out. So here's the concept. If you sell land to any of your own people or buy land from them, do not take advantage of each other. That's big in the law of Moses. Don't take advantage. No usury, no tax, no interest. Don't take advantage of one another. He says, you are to buy from your own people on the basis of the number of years since the Jubilee. And they are to sell to you on the basis of the number of years left for harvesting crops. When the years are many, you are to increase the price. And when the years are few, you are to decrease the price. Because what is really being sold to you is the number of crops. Don't take advantage of each other, but fear your God. I am the Lord your God. So the closer you got to that 50 years, change the price, depending on if you were close to the year of Jubilee or if you were far away from it. It's kind of amazing. I can't imagine Terry's car dealership coming up with that concept. Just it kind of depends where you are in the years. If you got a long way to go, price went up because you're going to have the land for longer. If it was almost going to be the year of Jubilee, you got a prorated cost. Prorated sales, especially in hard financial times. You couldn't take advantage of people. Verse 25 says, if one of your fellow Israelites becomes poor and has to start selling stuff off, they run out of money, one of your fellow Jews, one of your fellow Israelites, and then somebody in their family comes to redeem it, you didn't necessarily give them back what you paid for. It says, if there's no one to redeem it, but later on they prosper and acquire sufficient means to redeem it themselves, they are to determine the value for the year since they sold it and refund the balance to the one whom they sold it. And they can go back and have their own property. So it all depended on where it was in relation to that year of Jubilee. But there is a great story of hope right here. I think that's the message of this. That what if you can't ever get to the point where you can buy back your property? Well, you just had to wait. But there was hope. It was coming. It was the year of Jubilee. It will be returned in the Jubilee, and they can go back to their property. So if you had money, if you came into some money, or you were able to, you know, earn it or scrounge up enough to buy your property back, you could have it whenever you wanted it. But if you didn't have any money and you just couldn't do it, there was always light at the end of the tunnel. It was the year of Jubilee. When you got to the year of Jubilee, you would have your property restored to you. Because the other person really didn't own it. They were just leasing it. Same way with slavery. Okay? Leviticus 25, verse 47. If a foreigner resides among you, becomes rich, and any of your fellow Israelites become poor and sell themselves to the foreigner or to the member of their clan, they retain the right of redemption after they have sold themselves. One of their relatives may redeem them. An uncle or a cousin or any blood relative in their clan may redeem them. Or if they prosper, they can redeem themselves. So if you fell on hard times and you had to kind of sell yourself into slavery or indebted servitude, you could get out. Or someone else could redeem you. Remember the story of Ruth and Boaz. That's what that is. It's a near relative was redeeming, was purchasing the slave. Or if you found a way out of it yourself and you could buy yourself out of slavery, that was fine. You could purchase it based off of the year of Jubilee. But what happens if you never had any money? What happens if none of your near relatives came to your rescue? Well, there's still hope. Even if someone is not redeemed, they and their children are to be released in the year of Jubilee. So if they could buy their way out, great. But if you couldn't, just hold on. Hold on for the year of Jubilee. It says, for the Israelites belong to me as servants. They are my servants, whom I brought out of Egypt. I am the Lord. So this whole concept of the year of Jubilee to me is fascinating. So here's kind of a summary. Seven periods of 7 years. That's 49 years. Every seventh year was the Sabbath year. You had to give the land rest. But the 50th year was much more special. Farmland was to be rested for 2 years. land that had been sold had the opportunity to be redeemed, and slaves had the opportunity to be redeemed. And so even if you couldn't buy your way out of slavery, the year of Jubilee, everybody was released. To me, that's a fascinating concept. Here's the question. Did the nation of Israel obey the commands? Did they follow the Sabbath year commands and the year of Jubilee? Did they do what they were supposed to? I mean, because that's a pretty tall order, if you think about it. I mean, it's a great concept as long as somebody else is doing it. But that's a tough concept. Did the nation of Israel do what they were supposed to do? I'm going to go with no. Because you get to Jeremiah, the 25th chapter, Jeremiah starts saying, because you have not listened to my words, I will summon all the peoples of the north and my servant Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, declares the Lord. And I will bring them against this land and the inhabitants and against all the surrounding nations. I will completely destroy them and make them an object of horror and scorn and an everlasting ruin. So that's what we've been talking about in Daniel, right? When Babylon took him and took him back to captivity, destroyed the temple, destroyed the land. Look what Jeremiah continues with. I will banish from them the sounds of joy and gladness, the voices of bride and bridegroom, the sound of millstones and the light of the lamp. This whole country will become a desolate wasteland, and these nations will serve the king of Babylon 70 years. Why do they have to serve Babylon for 70 years? Why not 20 years? Why not 50 years? Why not 100 years? Why not 2 months? What is so special about this 70 years? Well, we get a little bit of insight if we keep digging. But when the 70 years are fulfilled, Jeremiah says, I will punish the king of Babylon and his nation, the land of the Babylonians, for their guilt, declares the Lord, and will make it desolate forever. Why the 70 years? What does that 70-year Babylonian captivity have to do with Sabbath years? What in the world does it have to do with any of it? Well, here's what it says. 2 Chronicles 36. And the account, this is kind of the historical account of when Babylon wiped people out, wiped out Israel. He carried into exile to Babylon the remnant who escaped from the sword, and they became servants to him and his successors until the kingdom of Persia came to power. Verse 21. The land enjoyed its Sabbath rest. All the time of its desolation it rested until the 70 years were completed in fulfillment of the word of the Lord spoken by Jeremiah. So it is implied here that those 70 years that the land was resting while the Israelites were in Babylon, it's because the Sabbath rest had not been being observed. And so I don't know if that means 70 times 7 for 490 years they had not been fulfilling their duties and their obligations. You know, I've always heard this saying that either you find time for your body to rest or your body will find time to rest itself. You know, either you're going to do the Sabbath rest and you're going to give the land rest, or the land is going to find a way to rest itself. And that's what happened. God took him to Babylon to make him pay for those 70 years of Sabbath rest that they had avoided. Kind of interesting. So now that pops us to this question. Was God angry? Was God mad at the Israelites? Was he mad at the children of Israel because they had been transgressing the law? You better believe it. Zechariah 1 and 12, the angel of the Lord answered and said, O Lord of hosts, how long will you not have mercy on Jerusalem and on the cities of Judah, against which you were angry these 70 years? He was mad. He was punishing them because for those 70 years, they had not been fulfilling the land and the rest of the Sabbath. So if they weren't doing the Sabbath year rest, kind of begs to ask, were they fulfilling the year of Jubilee? I'm going to go with probably not. If you weren't going to do step one, I really seriously doubt if you're going to do step two. I don't know. There's a lot of controversy on the year of Jubilee in the Jewish community. I had no idea. As I started studying, there's a lot of different camps from these old rabbis, and they really disagree on what the year of Jubilee was. They really have trouble with the calendar and trying to figure out what years were years of Jubilee and whatnot. But it's all very interesting. So what does that have to do with Daniel? What about Daniel and the Sabbath years and the year of Jubilee? Well, Daniel very quickly tied all of the writings of Jeremiah together. He picked up on it very quickly. Daniel 9 and 2. So we've been kind of studying from Daniel 9 lately. This is the 70 weeks prophecy chapter. And so I'm sure when he said 77s, or 70 weeks, the 77s, I'm sure he probably thought about this idea of the sabbatical years. I mean, he was a He was a God-fearing Jew who understood the scriptures. And he said, in the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, understood by the books of the number of the years specified by the word of the Lord through Jeremiah the prophet that he would accomplish 70 years in the desolation of Jerusalem. So the first thing that came to Daniel's mind was that prophecy of Jeremiah we just read. He said, that's right, 70 years. And at the time of this writing, Daniel's been in Babylon probably 65 plus years. And so now he's realizing, hey, those 70 years, it's almost up. And he's pretty excited about what's going to happen. I'm sure Daniel tied this all together with the concept of the 70 years and the 77s and the Sabbath year rest. And you're going to see there's even more too with the year of Jubilee. The return from Babylon. Go thinking about this. That Daniel was waiting for. Do you realize that actually fulfills the purpose of the year of Jubilee? Here they are in Babylon. God's going to fix everything after these 70 years. What's God going to do? Well, the land had been rested for 70 years. There's the resting from farming. The land was going to be restored to its rightful owners, that being the nation of Israel. And the slaves were free. They were no longer going to be slaves to Babylon. So all the concepts of the year of Jubilee were being fulfilled when the Babylonian captivity ended. And I think Daniel's starting to put all this together. And he's kind of understanding and figuring it all out. There we go. What about the arrival of the Messiah? Remember, because Daniel 9 and 24 now starts giving a very strong messianic prophecy. So right after Daniel kind of figures all this out, he starts giving a messianic prophecy. And I want you to notice something about the year of Jubilee. We're about to close. Luke chapter 4. It says, so he came to Nazareth, talking about Jesus. This is early on in his ministry, where he had been brought up. And as his custom was, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and stood up to read. And he was handed the book of the prophet Isaiah. And when he opened the book, he found the place where it was written. And this is from Isaiah 61 and 1. He says, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. What is Isaiah referencing there in Isaiah 61? To set captives free. To offer freedom to slaves. To set at liberty those who have been oppressed. What is this acceptable year of the Lord? What is that all in reference to? Every commentator I read. So those are allusions to the year of Jubilee. That Jesus was reading from Isaiah, and I want you to get the picture here. He's up in the synagogue. They give him a scroll. He turns right to Isaiah 61, and he reads that passage, and then he takes that book, and he closes it. And you remember what he said? He began to say to them, today the scripture is fulfilled in your hearing. You understand what Jesus just said? Jesus just said that passage in Isaiah talking about the acceptable year of the Lord and all of this year of Jubilee allusions and the releasing of the captives and giving liberty, all of that, he said, is being fulfilled right here in front of your eyes. What that tells to me, it appears that Jesus here declares that as he starts his ministry, it was probably one of the years of Jubilee. But it wasn't just any Jubilee. They weren't just restoring the land to the Jews. They weren't just releasing slaves from servitude. Oh, it's a much, much larger picture. So remember how the Passover pointed to Jesus? Remember how the Feast of First Fruits pointed to Jesus? How the Day of Atonement pointed to Jesus? And how everything kind of relates to Jesus? Guess what? I think the sabbatical years point to Jesus. I think the year of Jubilee pointed to Jesus. Because we have a Redeemer. We have someone who has purchased our souls. That has taken us out of slavery. That's what the year of Jubilee was all about. And that was accomplished through the actions of Jesus at the cross. This is the verse I used when I was doing the Feast of the Lord. I feel it's very appropriate for this study as well. So let no one judge you, Colossians 2 and 16 says. Let no one judge you in food or in drink or regarding a festival or a new moon or Sabbaths. Those are all those Old Testament images, right? Those are all those images that we pull out of the Old Testament He says, which are a shadow of things to come, but the substance is of Christ. All of those are shadows, but they all relate to Jesus. So I think this year of Jubilee pointed to the ultimate act of redemption by Jesus at the cross. And he purchased us from slavery. And now we have an opportunity to have our home in heaven. We talk about that all the time, right? A home in heaven. So we're having our land brought back to us. We're having our home returned to us as rightful heirs. So you start thinking about all these little phrases that we use. They all refer back to the year of Jubilee. So kind of an interesting study. As I said, I think I'm just kind of on the tip of the iceberg here. This whole idea of how everything in the Old Testament seems to somehow point to Jesus and the fulfillment of Jesus as the Messiah. So Daniel, I think, picks up on all of this. And so as we really continue talking about the 77s, the 70-week prophecies that you usually recall, it's not focused on the future. It was focused on Jesus and his return to the earth and how everything fits really nicely into this little book-ended situation of the return of the Messiah to the earth. Pretty interesting story. That's all I have for you this evening. We never know the hearts and minds of those that are here. If we can help you in any way, we stand ready to assist you this time.